It's still quite unusual to have two women, the soloist and the conductor, as the key figures in an orchestral concert. And yesterday I had the chance to talk to Andrea and Tasmin about this issue and much more besides. I started by asking Andrea where it had all begun for her.
I grew up in London initially. We moved out to the home counties, to Bedfordshire, when I was 8 years old.
And what about music in your childhood? Were you surrounded by it?
My mother had a great interest in music, but didn't play or doesn't play. I was brought up really with a very narrow repertoire of records, mainly the Beethoven symphonies. And I remember very clearly, as a youngster, going into a record store where my mother wanted to choose a box set of Beethoven symphonies. It was going to be her great pride. And there was an argument between her and the shopkeeper as to whether it should be Klemperer or Karajan. And even at that stage, when I knew so little about music, I kept thinking, why Klemperer or Karajan? Who are they? Why not just Beethoven? And that has remained with me very much ever since, in terms of course, interpretation of these great works.
What about you, Tasmin? Were there elements in your childhood that have stayed with you and remained with you in your interpretations now?
I think one of the things that I remember most vividly is something that my father said to me early on, because my father is an actor, so I grew up with the concept of walking on stage as something very natural. But I remember him saying that one's performance begins from the moment that the audience see the first bit of your nose, and it doesn't finish until your foot has crossed the threshold and gone backstage. And so, you know, the concept of how to perform and of the idea of entertainment, if you like, was something that was with me from earliest childhood.
And I mean, I have the same sort of experience, in that my whole childhood was full of music. My father was a great musician. And so, as you say, this sense of it being the most natural thing in the world is to walk on stage and to entertain people, which is, I guess, what we do, isn't it? Whatever genre of music we are making, we are there to entertain in the best possible sense.
Absolutely. And I think that nowadays there's an emphasis on people really overtly enjoying the entertainment from an audience point of view. And it's not really until you walk out on stage and you see the people for whom you're going to perform that you actually can find that extra bit of fizz that will give vitality and energy to a performance.
Yes, it's amazing actually how reactive one is to the audience. I mean, I, of course, stand with my back towards the audience, but still I'm very aware of the feeling in the hall.
And don't you find that when you walk on stage you pick up the atmosphere very quickly?
Immediately.
I certainly do.
Immediately. Yeah. And of course, during a performance you have a sense from the absolute quiet that you may have behind you, or alternatively movement and restlessness. So the audience, of course, is terribly important, even though our central aim is very much interpreting the music.
Do you think that your gender changes the way you interpret music? Is the way you both interpret what the music that you're making, is it different from how a man would?
I find that a very difficult question to
answer. I find it difficult too.
I mean, being a woman, it's very difficult to look upon ourselves from the outside. That's the first thing. In a way, I would like to feel that it doesn't. Really, our job is to interpret the composer in a way that fulfills his or her wishes. Of course, we're going to bring something of ourselves to that interpretation as well, and maybe there's a certain sort of a kind of feminine sensitivity. But then I think of, I mean, so many great conductors, Carlos Kleiber, Claudio Abbado, etc., 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 who all also have, I mean, they have a tremendous sensitivity, which could also be thought of as being feminine, maybe. So whether we bring something different, it's very difficult for us to judge, I think.
Yes, I think I would agree with you in the sense that I hope that there isn't anything to do with the gender that makes one different, but it's actually more a question of personality, that you can get some females who are incredibly domineering and very strong personalities, just as you can find some men who are weaker than some women from a character point of view. I think when I listen to people play, I think it's very interesting as a violinist, perhaps listening to another violinist. I think you can glean something of a person's personality by the way that they play, but I'm not sure that it's necessarily connected to whether that person is male or female. And I do have very vivid memories of a female violinist, Ida Haendel, who was one of my most favourite heroines violinists. And she really could not be accused of being a weak violinist at all. Far from it. She used to attack the violin in an incredibly ferocious manner. So I love the idea of strong women, but also I love the idea of strong, sensitive women. And I hope that obviously there's ways in which we as women can find a sensitive side, but it would be good to think that as a musician you can do that regardless of what gender you are.
There's another aspect here to gender, isn't there? How difficult is it as a woman, especially, I suppose, Andrea, as a conductor, where you're still in a world that is mainly dominated by men, how difficult was it in the beginning to make your mark as a conductor, as a woman?
Well, fortunately, even when I was starting out, things had changed a great deal. And certainly seeing more women going through the music colleges, studying conducting, and, of course, out there as conductors as well. I think, naively, a few years ago, I would have said there is no difference at all. So, you know, if you prove yourself as a good conductor, it makes no difference. I think where we walk a slightly dangerous tightrope is if we make mistakes, if we have an off concert, then we can maybe more easily be dismissed as a woman than as a man, because the gender issue might come into it with managers, orchestras, maybe. I do think it varies a little from country to country. I lived it for 5 years in the States and felt that there was almost a reverse a feeling of support, that if you were in a minority gender, you really had this tremendous cushion of support. And there was certain pride. I was music director of New York City Ballet, and I think they were very happy that I was a woman out there carrying, you know, the flag for, if you like, women conductors. Having said all that, I think it's terribly important in any aspect of musicianship that the business of gender really must be forgotten about. It mustn't be an issue, and for particularly if you're in a minority situation, the last thing we must do, as for example female conductors, is carry any sort of chip on our shoulders. We are there as musicians, simply.
Am I right in thinking that when you took over in New York, you were actually expecting your third baby?
Yes, that's right.
How on earth did you manage to cope with the challenges of both parts of your life?
I don't know. I really don't know, because it was a crazy time, because I was just finishing at the Royal Ballet. And in fact, I was 6 days before my due date with Freddie when I had two performances of Romeo and Juliet. The second one I couldn't do. But then literally, Freddie was born at the end of April. And in June, we moved to New York. And I was still doing a summer tour with the Royal Ballet in Boston as well. And he was in the baby carrier, and we just went from place to place. And somehow we coped. And I have a marvellously supportive husband, which, you know, also helps a great deal. But it was just, this is what I need to do, and this is what I'm booked to do, and I'm going to do it.
That's very interesting for me to hear, because I think that there is a real dedication in the music profession that if you are asked to do an engagement, you really want to fulfil it. Not quite at any personal expense, but nevertheless, I feel an equal commitment, and I've got two children, and I worked up until 2 weeks before giving birth for my first one, actually for both of them, and I started again 6 weeks later because that was where the work was, and I didn't want to cancel things. Maybe in the back of my mind, I didn't want anybody to think that now that I'd got children, I wasn't as reliable as I used to be. I think perhaps there was a small element of that, but it was also very much so that having taken on the responsibility of an engagement, a constant engagement, as musicians, we want to fulfil them. And, you know, I think that there's a huge pride in the music profession towards putting on top quality concerts and doing what you promised to do.
I feel exactly the same. I mean, I have three children. I sang up to 4 weeks before they were born and was back again breastfeeding in the green room 4 weeks afterwards.
Isn't it hilarious? You must be incredibly fit.
I have to tell you something, which is I just finished, as I say, at the Royal Ballet. After Freddie was born, I had to do a gala at short notice, literally within 12 days, I think, after his birth. And then I moved to the States, and a conductor called me from England. He said, "You've left one thing in the dressing room." I said, "What's that?" And he said, "It's a breast pump."
And I mean, what is wrong with that? I mean, I do remember one opera director who will be nameless actually said to me when he came across me in the green room feeding my baby, he didn't quite understand. He said, "I think you ought to make up your mind whether you're going to be a mother or a singer." And, you know, that really made me think. And it was soon after that, when I was having my third child, that I decided I had to make the choice that I couldn't tour with an opera company any longer. I mean, that some people would say is a sacrifice. Others would say, well, it was just a decision that had to be made. But, of course, men don't have to make those sort of decisions, do they?
No. I agree that I think that there is a slightly greater conflict in the mind of a woman when it is with regard to career versus looking after children, because of course one through the ages one has been thought as the primary carer, and although that isn't necessarily the case now, and there are a lot of men who stay at home to look after the children while the lady goes out to work, but I still think that there is actually something in us as women that makes us feel a little guilty if we're neglecting our children for our own selfish purposes of pursuing a career. So I think that there are lots of decisions that have to be made, not just necessarily one big decision, but each time it's a choice between, okay, will I stay at home or will I take this tour on? And I find myself making choices. And I, for instance, when I first had my children, I cut down from 80 concerts a year to 40 concerts a year. And now gradually it's gone back up again, and I'm at about 60 now, and that's a number that I feel happy with, because I feel that I can fulfil concert commitments to the standard that I wish without exhausting myself and still leaving time to do the other things in my life, which are very important.
I've done it a slightly different way, in that for a long time I was working with ballet companies, and my job meant that I was coming home each evening. So when I was with the Royal Ballet and then, of course, New York City Ballet, I had a lot of stability in terms of not always having to be in hotels away from children. And since having come back to the UK, all my work involves me travelling, mostly going abroad. And now my husband is working full-time as a doctor. I have made the decision to cut my work right back and just do a few weeks a year. And actually what's very interesting is my eldest two daughters are 16 and 14. And the funny thing is they almost need you at home more than ever. And I really feel that for me now, the right place is to be very much more in with my family and to put my musical career on the side burner, not to extinguish altogether, but just to give it a rest for a while.
Yes, to keep it on hold, I suppose,
yes,
really.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? I mean, I'm going back, I suppose, to something I said earlier on, which I feel very strongly about, and perhaps male listeners might not agree with. The three of us are mothers. I really think that that does make a difference to how we interpret our music. I don't know whether you agree with that.
I think if you experience the sort of intensity of joy and feeling that you do within the first few hours of having a child, I think that's is a feeling that's very hard to replicate maybe in any other form whatsoever. And I think it teaches you something new, as you say, which you will bring to every facet in your life, but particularly something as personal and as intimate as making music.
I agree, and I think that any emotional experience that you have, which is as huge, if you like, and sort of all-consuming as having a child, will obviously have an effect. And perhaps one could take it a step further and say that an experience which might give you an equivalent depth would be an intense bereavement or something else that will again plumb you to the very, very depth of your being. So I think that any intensity of experience is going to obviously affect you as a person, and then in turn is naturally going to affect the way that you will interpret music, and perhaps you can understand more of the despair that Tchaikovsky might have felt if you've had a terrible loss in your life. So all these experiences of life, I think, are always inevitably going to go into the music, which is why I personally believe that most musicians develop and get better. And I know personally, when I listen to recordings that I made 20 years ago, I don't think I play anything like as well as I do now.
You're evidently both on the same wavelength. Have you ever worked together before?
No, this is our first experience together.
How has the rehearsal period gone? What has it felt like working together?
Well, I think it's excellent. One of the funny things is that neither Andrea nor I have ever done either of these pieces with orchestra. So I'm coming to the Dvorak and the Sarasate with orchestra for the very first time. I have played them both with piano, but it's a long time since I played the Dvorak. It's a piece that I adored while I was studying. And in fact, I have nice associations of studying this piece, because when I was 14, I had to go back to basics. My technique had gone a little bit awry. And so I was on scales and studies for what felt like an eternity. Then I was finally given a wonderful piece to learn, and it was the Dvorak Romance. And I so loved working at this piece with my newfound technique. And then I finally worked it up and played it in a concert, and it went incredibly well. And so it's a piece that, as I say, it's got a special significance for me. And I'm really, really thrilled to play it for the very first time with an orchestra, because although it's great to play it with piano, it is much more meaningful and much more emotional, I think, with the orchestra. And also, by the same token, of course, playing the Sarasate is more dramatic with an orchestra than it can be with just a piano.
Indeed. And I've thoroughly enjoyed working with Tasmin today. It's been a great pleasure for me. And like Tasmin says, it's the first time for me, and actually the first time with all of these pieces, apart from the Radetzky March. I haven't done any of the repertoire before.
Oh, what a responsibility.
So it's a steep learning curve.
Now, if you weren't working on New Year's Day, what would you be doing?
I've done lots of different things on New Year's Day. New Year's Day at the beginning of 2008, I went for a long walk with my sister and my children, and that was great fun.
What about you, Andrea?
I think I'd probably be out riding my horse, maybe with my daughter, and I'd probably do that, never mind the weather. That's where I'd be very happy.
What about New Year's resolutions? Do either of you ever make them?
I have made New Year's resolutions. I used to make lots of resolutions when I was a child, and then I realised that I never seemed to be able to stick to any of them. You know, one involved reading every single newspaper every single day and things like
tall
that.
Tall order.
Very tall order, yes, that's right, yes. I think perhaps I've tempered my idealism with more realism now. So I think my New Year's resolution is to stop worrying so much and have a little bit more faith. I mean, I'm a fairly positive person anyway, but we all worry about silly things, and I think we worry unnecessarily, and I think that's going to be my New Year's resolution, so we'll see how I get on this year.
Oh, I hope you can keep to it. What about you, Andrea?
Well, like Tasmin, I used to be very strict with myself about making resolutions in the first place and sticking to them, which would probably last a couple of months, and then gradually, as the year winds on and more happens, then these things sadly tend to go out of the window, and at the end of the year brings some regret as you reflect on what you had hoped to achieve but haven't quite achieved. My resolution for this year is to relax and enjoy doing what I'm about to do. It's actually quite a challenge to step back, and particularly coming back from New York and suddenly becoming Mrs. Champ, as I'm known in the Herefordshire circles, and losing some identity as a conductor. And I guess my resolution is just to sit back and enjoy being a mother.
And what do you hope that the people in the audience will feel when they leave the hall after this concert? What do you want them to feel inside?
I would like them to feel great joy and feel energised and send them out into the new year with a bang.
Absolutely. I would love people to feel exhilarated, and that the joy that Andrea spoke about will carry people through, because I think music is not just about escapism of the moment, although it can very much do that, but it is about energising. It's about giving people hope. Sometimes it's about helping people through some difficult emotions and in some way then allowing people to express that in the safety through the music, which can be a wonderful medium. But I think, yes, just to give people hope and make them feel happy and hopefully positive about the future.
Well, I'm sure that this music will have the desired effect, and I hope that Tasmin Little and Andrea Quinn will manage to keep their New Year's resolutions for a couple of weeks anyway. It was a joy to talk to them both yesterday. I'm Beverly Humphreys, and you're listening to the BBC National Orchestra of Wales celebrating the New Year here on Radio Wales in a concert from the Brangwyn Hall in Swansea.